This is the Science Behind the Art, where we discuss the insights of the cosmetic industry through a different lens, uniting scientists and artists. We are the New York Society of Cosmetic Chemists. I'm Maria.
I'm Regina.
And I'm Leah. Join us as we embrace beauty and dive behind the scenes of the cosmetic industry.
So, hello, everybody. Welcome to our podcast, Beauty Around the World. I would like to introduce you all to Dr. Amber Evans. Dr. Evans is a cosmetic industry professional with over a decade of experience in research and innovation. In her current position as a senior manager of product development at Moroccan Oil, she leverages her technical expertise to help drive the global launch of prestige hair and body care products. Prior to Moroccan Oil, she worked as a development scientist at BASF Corporation, where her contributions spanned multiple market segments, including hair, body, and oral care. She also previously supported initiatives such as upstream research for hair colorants and clinical testing for skin/shave care products at Procter & Gamble. Dr. Evans earned her PhD in pharmaceutical science with a cosmetic science focus from the University of Cincinnati and her bachelor's of science in chemistry from North Carolina Agricultural and Technical State University. She has authored her hair care research publications, contributed content to naturallycurly.com, the leading resource for textured hair care, and featured on multiple platforms that support aspiring scientists and early career professionals. As a mentor, active member of the Society of Cosmetic Chemists, peer reviewer for the Journal of Cosmetic Science, and member of the 25 Black Women in Beauty, or 25BWB, Dr. Evans is dedicated to influencing the progression of the cosmetic field. So, welcome, Dr. Evans. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much for inviting me. We appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you. And just to start, tell me a little bit about yourself.
So a little bit about me. I am originally from Columbia, South Carolina. I have a background in chemistry. I've always been passionate about many areas of science, whether it be meteorology, whether it be astronomy, whether it be zoology, and of course, chemistry. And so, you know, with that, I always knew that I would do something within a scientific field. And here I am in the beauty industry, a trained hair care scientist and cosmetic chemist. And the majority of my background is focused within research and innovation for various product types, whether they be in hair care, body care, and a little bit of oral care as well.
Thank you for that. And sure. You have a very impressive just resume in terms of experience and in terms of just the different opportunities that you worked on and education. And so now now that you are a senior manager at Moroccan Oil, how has that transition been? And were there any particular challenges that you had to overcome entering into this new role?
So I would say that transitioning from the ingredient supplier side of the business back to the finished goods side of the business has been exciting. But one of the transitions has been the pace of the work and the scope of the work. I would say one of the challenges and the excitement of the role is learning different areas and different processes that were previously not relevant to my roles in upstream research or in development for ingredients. So things like packaging and compatibility, operations, you know, the logistics of actually bringing a product to market, not necessarily bringing in raw material, but a full formula to market, and not just market, but to multiple markets. So it's been a great learning experience. Another challenge has been simultaneously managing products projects rather in multiple market segments, all of them being at different points in the pipeline, all of them having different, you know, different priorities, different fires to put out and that sort of thing. So, you know, when you think about it in upstream research, you usually spend a lot of time and focus on a few projects because, you know, honestly, like there's a lot of resources that go into upstream work. And so it's just not financially feasible to have 10, you know, upstream research programs going right. on at the same time. And so I've done that for the majority of my career and that it might be a couple projects that are ongoing, you know, at the same time. But in this particular role, further downstream in product development, specifically on the brand side, there are multiple projects. It's a whole lot going on. So a lot of things to keep up with. And so it can be overwhelming in some respects, but I think overwhelming is really the cousin of exhilarating, right? Okay. Or I'm telling myself, right?
Okay.
So again, you know, it's a great opportunity. And I've been in this role now for 5 months and I've gotten, you know, better at it. And I you know, really look forward to continuing to grow and learn more about the process of actually bringing a product to market, not necessarily, or not just rather the science of the product, which is what I've previously focused on, but actually the full, you know, everything about it, the business of the product, you know, bringing it to market, everything that needs to happen to get it to market and into the hands of consumers. So I'm really appreciative, you know, of the experience and the challenges, because challenges certainly are opportunities for you to grow. Mm-hmm. And I have a wonderful, you know, wonderful and supportive team. So it's great. And then also actually to tie into the theme of this podcast with beauty around the world, I work very closely with global partners. And that's something that I've done before, but I'm working more closely, you know, with them. So when you mentioned, you know, challenges, one of the challenges is, you know, dealing with a team that's maybe on a different time zone, and not just mm-hmm. different time zone, few hours, but like, yeah. So I'm working very closely with Japan and with Israel. Mm-hmm. So that can be a challenge sometimes. But again, it's also very interesting to learn about other markets and to learn about things that I never even considered. For example, registration in other countries and that sort of
thing. Ooh, that's a doozy.
Yeah. And so it's really interesting. And Moroccan oil is sold in over 60 countries. So there's definitely a lot to learn and a lot to consider. And so this particular topic, you know, really resonates with me personally as someone who enjoys travel, but mm-hmm. also as someone who's, you know, working on bringing products to market all over the world as well.
Thank you for sharing that and for that level of transparency, because a lot of us, when we have these career transitions, I mean, it's never easy, but even when these challenges do come, it's definitely a chance for growth. And also, as you said, it is exhilarating at times, even though in that moment, you're probably like, oh my gosh, I'm so done with this. It's going to be beneficial in the long run. Also, to bring up Moroccan oil. So as many of you all may know, Moroccan oil is a very widely known global business. And they do reach, as Dr. Evans just said, into 60 countries. So a lot of people, not just Americans, know and associate with what Moroccan oil is and their brand identity. And so this leads me into our next question. When it comes to beauty around the world, as you know, that beauty, depending on where you are, it is diverse. So our beauty standards here in America are different from our beauty standards in the United Kingdom or even Japan and Korea. And so I wanted to ask you, just in like your years, not even just as a ingredient supplier side, but now that you are working with or more downstream with Moroccan oil, what trends have you seen or do you see emerging in our US market in like the next 3 to 5 years ish?
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting question. So I would say that even though beauty is diverse around the world, there are some common things, right? I think as a whole, humanity is moving to be more in touch with themselves and more in touch with the environment. So we see emerging a bit more in the US, and certainly probably this is something that's been perhaps escalated due to pandemic as well. But we see this connection between beauty and wellness. So consumers are looking to have a beauty experience or a cosmetic experience that not only makes them look good, but it makes them feel good as well. So in that respect, we see perhaps the rise of nutritional supplements that have effects on, you know, on your skin and that sort of thing, or more products, you know, related to that. So I would say that, you know, one of the things is that we've perhaps maybe in the past looked at beauty as something separate from everything else, such as health and wellness, et cetera. But now we're actually seeing the two come together. So, you know, we see it come together in that respect. There's also the area of immunocosmetics, in which, you know, we're, you know, particularly like looking at things that impact the immune system, because it's known that the immune system can impact skin and that sort of thing.
Right.
So some of those types of things, are what I'm seeing emerging here in the US. And then there are also things like what I would say is like the beautification of skincare and hair care, particularly with respect to conditions of skin or conditions of hair, such as dandruff, such as eczema for skin, and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for example, it used to be that maybe some of the brands that catered to individuals that had scalp issues or skin issues, those brands were deemed like more medicine-y or more medicated, and it's not exactly sexy. Whereas now you see brands such as topicals that are really just sort of saying, hey, it's okay to, you know, to have skin conditions, but we're going to make this fun and we're going to make this more cosmetic. So if you see their packaging is fun, it's light, you know, it's bright colors. And the brand is really centered around one, of course, being efficacious, but also making it cool, you know, in a sense to treat your skin for certain conditions. And you also see that with other brands like Jupiter as well for hair care. So it's, you know, maybe part of the focus is for anti-dandruff, but rather than it being, you know, perhaps maybe like a stuffy medicated type brand, it's really just sort of normalizing caring for your skin or hair with various conditions. And so again, I term that as the beautification of skin and hair conditions. I don't know if it's a word or not, but it sounds like.
Yeah, okay. I mean, it's definitely more information that I just learned just right now than, because I could just say, yeah, you're right. Because I'm like, I don't really, this definitely is not, I haven't done my own research as thoroughly into what trends, not even just here in the United States, but globally, and how similar we are in that regard. But it's quite interesting that you did mention that whole holistic approach, that not just like everybody is trying to equate wellness and beauty together. And I mean, I guess being in like this pandemic and like just COVID, I mean, essentially I've been just personally, like I've been using more of my skincare products, and I've actually noticed that I've been using less amounts of products because I am sometimes like, not scared, but like, it's like, oh, if I bought this now, it might be sold out in like the next couple of weeks and I won't be able to get my hands on it. But
you're rationing your beauty products.
Yeah, literally. So I mean
that's not a bad idea, because you know, the pandemic really messed with a lot of supply chains.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of brands weren't able to get their packaging, definitely, or you know, some of their raw materials. So for some brands that used to be able to turn around products within a week or two, it would be months. or a month or so before you could get a product. So that's actually not a bad idea.
I mean, it's just interesting to, because like, I just realized that, oh my gosh, like I do subconsciously equate beauty with wellness, because I do put more emphasis on, especially like sun care. It's, I mean, I'm not going outside as much, but I mean, getting UV light from my windows, because I keep all my windows open. Because I mean, it's a nice day, even though I don't go outside to enjoy
it. Yeah. I mean, need the sunlight.
Mm-hmm. I make sure that I keep my sunscreen on, moisturize. Everything. I do. Like, honestly, because, but I mean, it's just to show that, I mean, that equates to wellness. And even I did not even recognize that until after this conversation. So,
right. And it just really ties into this whole point that we all are a little bit more conscious of everything, not just of, you know, what we're putting into our bodies or on our bodies, particularly for cosmetics, but we're conscious about the effects that we are having and those products are having on the environment. And so that's why you see more interest in sustainability or interest in natural ingredients, or what that specifically means within the context of that brand, because we know that there's been a lot of, you know, a lot of sort of different levers for what's natural and what's clean and what's this and what's that. But again, it all centers on being more conscious about things, and particularly about the beauty experience. Mm. If I could just point out, you know, that when we talk about trends, sustainability and natural was a trend many, many years ago, you know, and maybe at that time it was niche. But now sustainability and natural and whatever you want to associate, you know, those terms with is now actually a requirement. And so that trend, that's sort of taken hold of the industry, and it's going to continue as well, particularly into other areas beyond just the ingredients, you know, beyond just the formula. You think of other areas where the beauty industry has impact on the environment. So, for example, packaging, which is tricky. But again, you know, as we continue to become more conscious, and as we continue to make advancements in, you know, in sustaining the planet, particularly as it relates to beauty consumption, I think that we're going to see even more advancements within that particular area. And we've seen it already. I mean, if you think back, I'd say like in the last year or so, some of the brands actually have kiosks where you can just return your used bottles.
Yeah,
so right. Already, you know, we talk about a trend, but already you can kind of see that trend. You can see it moving, because certainly like 5 years ago, that wasn't a thing. But now you see some of the larger brands having services where you can just take the empty containers back, or you have brands that are really making more conscious decisions about not using so much packaging, either when they're shipping their products or when they are having them on shelves, and considering strongly about the type of material that they're using also.
Mm-hmm.
So one other point that I would just like to make on emerging trends here in the US is that I think we're becoming more accepting of beauty enhancements. So more accepting of things such as fillers and Botox and lifts, that sort of thing. And not just from a perspective of someone who's always in the public eye, you know, such as a model or a social media star, et cetera, but really normal people, you know, are becoming more interested in these things. I recently heard a professional mention that she has more people actually coming to her office and asking for fillers and that sort of thing, and asking for other treatments as well, because now that we're having mask mandates in most places, and then also working remotely rather than having to go into the office, it's a convenient time to actually experiment with these types of treatments and recover at home, you know, without going into work with a swollen face and that sort of thing. And people are really asking for that natural, you know, sort of look. So I think when we think of plastic surgery and when we think of beauty enhancements, we think of the extreme over the top examples of it, like duck lips or, you know, enhancements that look, you know, almost comical and that sort of thing. But these particular doctors are actually having people, you know, that are coming in for small changes. And then I remember there was a comment about two coworkers having a conversation and maybe one broke the ice and said that they were thinking about having a procedure. And the other coworker said, oh yeah, I have that. And that, and, you know, from that example, it was more like, oh, well, you have that. And okay, so this is something that can be normal versus the exaggerated, you know, look that we generally see in the media. So I think, you know, people are maybe becoming a little bit more accepting of it. And then also perhaps from demographics that have not been perhaps interested in those types of procedures as well, for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. So just an interesting point. And I'd really like to keep an eye on that to see how it evolves, certainly with science and some of the other things that are happening in the industry as well.
I'm also, I'm also curious because, I mean, like you said, I do equate enhancements to the extremes, but even with like recent studies and just even like the daily like news, there have been a lot of people going in for, as you said, different procedures, even for like, besides like the fillers, actually for like breast implants or like for like actual like major cosmetic surgery. And you're right, because we are given some more downtime since we are at home. I mean, in some areas, the lockdowns have actually lifted and like they're at 100% normal. But in the majority of places, I mean, there are people who are getting these procedures because, I mean, they can heal and have some time because they can just sit behind the camera or a filter or like whatnot. So that's a very good point.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I didn't think much about it because I don't really think much about beauty enhancements. But when that comment was made, it really sort of resonated because I think, you know, perhaps the barrier to a number of people getting it is the recovery, mm-hmm. right? And then it's also the stigma of even having it. So some folks might not even want others to know. So imagine, you know, if we were in our normal routine of going to the office every day, they wouldn't have that time to actually, you know, recover from it. And then, of course, there would probably have to be some sort of explanation mm-hmm. of, you know, why someone is looking a certain way, especially if it goes wrong.
Yep.
So I think, you know, it's perhaps a combination of things mm-hmm. that are really driving this.
Mm-hmm. I agree, especially also the price point, because I have just seen like, it's not cheap to do these procedures. Like that's definitely, well, especially if you want to go to like a quality professional, you do have to pay a pretty penny besides going to, anyway. So I mean, yeah, that is true. So now our next question, in your opinion, what is your opinion about beauty around the world? Like when you hear this term, like what automatically comes to your mind?
Different.
Okay.
The word different comes to my mind. I like this topic. I like this topic a lot, actually. I'm very fascinated with beauty practices around the world and beauty perceptions around the world. Mm-hmm. It's really something that I kind of integrate, you know, into my personal life. So when I travel, I always try to go and purchase products from the country that I'm in, or at least just going and looking at the beauty aisle, whether I'm in the grocery store or a specific beauty store, et cetera. I like to go and actually look at the products, you know, look at the offering, look at the packaging, look at, you know, the advertising, you know, right? Because the way we advertise here in the US might be different than the way other countries advertise things. And I even like to look at the languages on the labels on the products and see it in the different languages. There's something that's really cool about that to me. I know it sounds weird because I can't read it, but it's just really interesting. It's really interesting to see. And so it's something that I'm actually very passionate about. When I say the word different comes to mind, it's because, you know, you always see, we all like have our perceptions of beauty and we have our beauty practices, but when you go other places and see other cultures, they could be doing something that's beautiful to them that we would never do. Mm-hmm. You know, it just wouldn't make sense for us. And so I just find it really, really interesting. For example, in Madagascar, the women there, they wear this mask on their faces. And so they take wood and they grind that wood up and add water to it. The wood specifically from the Mesanjori tree. Mm-hmm. And so this particular beauty ritual, is called Mesanjori. But they take this pulp and this wood and grind it up, add water, and they put the mask on their faces. Mm-hmm. And so this mask is to primarily protect them from the sun, but it's also to soften the skin, you know, that sort of thing, and to just look beautiful. Mm-hmm. But can you imagine that they wear this out in public? So they do this, they wear this in public. So imagine they have the mask on, and depending on the wood that the mask is made from, it can vary in color. So some of them can be a lighter color. Some of them can be a little bit more orangish, and they smear this over their faces. And this, they go about their business like during the day. So could you imagine like us doing a charcoal mask and going to work, you know, or doing a charcoal mask and going like to eat dinner with our friends and sitting out in a restaurant, you know, mm-mm, just living life with a mask on. So, you know, I use that example because it's really interesting. We don't really associate that with beauty or something that's acceptable, but there's beauty in it, and mm-hmm, that's their culture, and they associate it with beauty. And so the women will wear it all day, and then in the evening they'll rinse it off.
That's so interesting.
It really is. And so I I was on the tour, and I would see like this woman here, she has on a white one, and then she has on a more kind of tannish one, and then hers looks more orange, and they would just be walking down the street like carrying on, you know, like just it's their normal day, or they would right, be, you know, maybe selling some goods or something. They're just like carrying on normal life, mm-hmm, with their mask on, not a care in the world. Mm-hmm. You know, and so to them it's beautiful, but it's also to them protecting their skin, mm-hmm, and, you know, caring for their skin. So, mm-hmm, you know, dual purposes. Mm-hmm. And then you think of other cultures like the Himba women of Namibia. I mean, they're iconic for their red skin and their hair with the red clay on it. But to them, that's beautiful. And so to see them in person wearing that, it looks beautiful. Their skin looks magnificent, so smooth. I mean, like, so something is working, you know. And so just to step back, they're using red ochre and animal fat to make this particular clay mixture that they then put on their skin, and then of course, also on their hair as well. And so to them, that's being beautiful. Yes, it's protective for the skin, but it's being beautiful.
Mm-hmm. I love hearing these stories, especially since, because you're right, we are all different. We all perceive beauty differently. And just hearing the two examples that you just mentioned, it actually reminded me, do you remember when the fermented rice water was like a huge trend back in 2018, 2019?
And yeah, I think it's kind of resurfaced.
Yeah, in more recent times, from like a village in China where they actually washed their hair with rice, mm-hmm, water, and people equated their long, luscious black hair because they rinsed it with fermented rice, mm-hmm, water. And it's just funny because, I mean, when people were doing it, I mean, a lot of people either said that they liked it or they hate it because of the like smell, because I mean, fermented, mm-hmm, rice water doesn't smell all the best. But, I mean, it's just, even here, like we even judged it, and some people were for it, some people were not. But I mean, it just goes to show that the cultural differences do play a part in our beauty standards.
Right. And then the other thing about that, though, when you bring up, when you think about the things that other cultures are doing, we have to look at it holistically, right? Mm-hmm. So yes, these women are using this rice water, but they are also, you know, as part of their culture, growing their hair out. Mm-hmm. They're also, you know, as part of their culture, not bleaching and, mm-hmm, you know, doing all of the things that we do in our culture to our hair. They're not flat ironing, constantly and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So their diet, of course, you know, their diet is different. And so we have to be careful here when we look at other cultures and see that certain things are working for them. We have to be careful to not just isolate that thing. Like, if this, then this. It's not always exactly an if this, then this. There are other things to consider in there. Now, while it could be helping with hair growth, you know, there are other things, other factors at play as well. But it's really interesting to at least leverage that information from other cultures, because now how many product lines came out with a rice water, you know, something or other, you know, product line. And I'm not saying that, you know, in a negative way. Some brands might really be leveraging chemistry that supports hair growth. But then, of course, in our industry, there are some brands who are likely just using the trend, you know, to market a product. And that's, you know, not to say anything. That's just how the beauty industry works. But I do think that there's value in the science. For example, in Japan, you know, they're very high tech. So I think, you know, when I mentioned that there are things that we can learn from other cultures and leverage for our purposes, you think about a company like Japan that's high tech, they're very advanced in beauty devices and that sort of thing. And so that could actually be, you know, that could be useful for other areas as well. I mean, they're probably actually leading in that way, leading in that particular area as well. Another example would be South Korea, who's actually leading in patents granted for formulations and devices to prevent or treat hair loss. So those types of things we could really leverage in other cultures, because everyone is concerned with, you know, maintaining their hair, right? It's not just, you know, one particular country that cares about this. This is something that's across the board of interest. And so when I think again about beauty around the world, I think about different, you know, as I mentioned before, but then I also think about leveraging those differences, mm-hmm. right? And how they can be beneficial for everyone.
Mm-hmm. I mean, when it comes to just different areas that like come to mind when it comes to just beauty, not a lot of people like consider certain countries, and just for the reason of just different cultural differences. And also the fact that, I mean, marketing does play a huge role into the popularity of a product. So L'Oreal is known everywhere, not just in America, but in Paris and China, in the Middle East. Like, people know who L'Oreal is, like people know who Moroccan oil is because of marketing. And like, when it comes to just smaller, like unknown name brands, it's kind of hard for them to at least get that global influence in other countries if they're not really able to market to those consumers as properly.
Right. So that's where social media comes into play. That's where connecting with people comes into play. That's where the virtual world, you know, comes into play. Mm-hmm. So before we had all of these technologies that allow us to meet virtually, this would have been a significant challenge, for example. Mm-hmm. But think about it this way. If a brand is interested, there are many brands that are successful here, but they also have, you know, following in other countries as well. Mm-hmm. I can envision that they would maybe host webinars or host meet and greets. And now that we're doing so many things virtual, that enables that sort of thing to happen. So the internet really connects us. It really connects us all. Mm-hmm. I mean, more than ever. And I mean, certainly now with the pandemic, it's really all that we have to really connect. And I think that people are leveraging it even more for the purpose of connecting and really pushing initiatives. Mm-hmm. So just because something starts here in the US or starts somewhere else, it doesn't mean that it has to stay exactly there. It's all about that promotion, and it's all about making connections. And that's the beauty of the internet, and frankly, the beauty of social media. Because, you know, now that social media is available, there's engagement, and there's engagement with people from different areas. But I will say that there's engagement, there's greater engagement now. And that's really how a lot of brands have been able to move into different countries mm-hmm. and reach other demographics by, you know, simply hosting things or simply having influencers promote certain things.
Oh, yeah.
So right now, attention is currency. So a particular brand doesn't have to have presence in another country. They just have to have a connection to someone that has presence. So if you send out products to influencers in another country and their followers are primarily based in, you know, a specific country, or these days people are based all over the world, followers are based all over the world, that's your, you know, that's your connection. And that's how we can really use the power of social media and the power of the internet and technology to really grow mm-hmm. beyond, you know, beyond our regional markets.
Yeah, that is true. I mean, the power of social media, man.
It is the power of the wonders. I got to tell you, it's working wonders.
Yeah, it is. It definitely is. And I mean, as an industry, we do have to evolve. Well, we are a industry that has grown and is continuously evolving and ebbing and flowing. So social media will continue to help us do as such. And also, based upon your opinion about beauty around the world, I mean, have there been any special like books or magazines that crossed your eye when you pictured beauty around the world?
So I'd also like to highlight a great resource that's going to be published in the March-April timeframe entitled Beauty Stories from Around the World. This book is published by the Makeup Museum here in New York City in partnership with L'Oreal. And the book really focuses on the beauty rituals of Black, Indigenous, and people of color around the world. Each chapter of the book explores a cultural beauty ritual or theme. And I'm super excited for this book. As soon as it was announced, I ordered it and I've been sitting at the door waiting for it. No, I haven't been sitting. I'm very excited. I'm very, very, very excited to get this book.
Same here. I also pre-ordered it. I'm very, very excited to get my own copy, especially to just have it on my coffee table. Like, that's going to look beautiful when someone walks in.
Absolutely. And the information that's in it, right? Because, I mean, in the industry, I don't believe that there are very many resources that really focus on beauty rituals from that particular demographic. So this is what I believe to be an advancement for the industry. And I think that it's going to be very exciting to actually read through and actually see the imagery. I know it's going to be beautiful, right?
Yes, it's going to be gorgeous. And I can tell it's going to be worth the wait. So I highly also encourage our viewers, if you can, find yourself a copy, because this is definitely going to be fruitful.
Agreed.
And so, segueing into our next question, as you just mentioned, I mean, the beauty industry, especially here in the United States, I mean, our standards of beauty have changed a lot, but we do have like this Europeanized standard of beauty, which is to be expected, because I mean, this is just our culture. This is just our norm here. And as a Black woman, I mean, you and I have seen that just there is a certain demographic that is just not pushed. And unfortunately, Black and African Americans, we do fall into that category. And if there was something that you could change about our US or Western beauty, what would it be and why?
So I think, you know, within that area, I would say one thing would be normalizing knowledge of diverse hair and skin types, particularly for individuals that work in beauty service or even medical industries. So for example, I've heard stories of models and actresses who have encountered makeup artists and stylists who didn't know how to do makeup on pigmented skin, on melanated skin, or textured hair types. And so I would really hope that would change in the future. And then also from a medical standpoint, as well as just not just from the beauty side of things, also from the medical standpoint, I think that in some cases, medical students aren't exposed to people of color. And there tends to be still some myths about people of color, particularly along the lines of how something that comes up quite frequently is how we experience pain. And if we experience pain to the same extent of others, and obviously the myth is that we don't experience pain as much.
We're not superhuman.
Exactly. But, you know, specifically like as it relates to the beauty industry, for example, there appears to be a disconnect in the medical field. A majority of medical students are only taught how to diagnose various skin conditions on white patients. This has been echoed by medical students. And so one medical student in particular, Malone McQuinde, actually created a solution for that. His solution to this issue was to create a textbook and website of images and descriptions of the clinical signs and symptoms of various skin conditions, actually on Black and brown skin. And so the name of the resource is Mind the Gap. And I think this is an asset to the industry because you could, you know, certainly imagine that if medical students aren't trained on certain skin types, there's a good chance that individuals from that particular demographic could be misdiagnosed or not diagnosed at all for, you know, whatever skin ailment they might be experiencing.
Mm-hmm. And I do appreciate that level of transparency because, I mean, this is, for some people, a triggering topic, but this is a conversation that needs to be had. And I am very thankful that we are having this conversation and this was brought to the table, that even to this day, we're still having these disparaging acts where you would think that since we are all so diverse and we all have different types of skin and our skin does not react the same, everything should be studied. But clearly we still have a lot to learn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I would say, especially from a medical perspective, I mean, you know, I think of it in this way, in that beauty and cosmetics are optional, right? But health is not optional. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, that's the requirement.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Well, I do believe that we are heading in the right direction, that since these topics are, people are becoming more aware of just the lack of communication and just the lack of effort that's been put towards certain communities. At least now, there has been a push, especially just by different activists and different consumers for just, like, there has been a push from a lot of consumers to be all inclusive when it comes to certain like drops of different products, especially color cosmetic formulas. There's now just a bigger expectation that you need to have at least, let's say, like 50 shades of a foundation concealer so that everybody is able to match to a particular shade. And so that you are considered all inclusive, because that's now the standard. It's now, it's not okay to single out a group anymore, which I'm very glad for.
Right. And so that's the other part of what I would change, or rather encourage about US and Western beauty, just really continuing down that path of diversity, and not just diversity, but a path of intentional and genuine diversity and inclusion, you know, and just also moving beyond traditional and, you know, in some cases, offensive ideals and practices such as outright or covert discrimination, particularly, you know, when we think about things related to hair and skin tone, particularly.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And the key is intentional, like be intentional with your actions. I don't like, just even as the average consumer, like they are smarter than what we perceive them to be. So if we see that you're not being intentional in your diversity efforts, that's not going to forebode well for a brand or a company.
Absolutely. And I mentioned, you know, genuine as well, because we, you know, would like to get away from performative, you know, actions. We want it to be genuine. And I think, you know, in some way, the industry is moving in that way. Mm-hmm. And I would just hope that going forward, we continue to move in a positive direction.
100%. And this actually segues into our next question. as you know, I mean, living in America, I mean, we have currently a lot of trends coming and going, like left and right. One day it was like parabens are bad, and now we're like sulfates are bad, natural is good, vegan is good. And so even though we have all of these trends, I mean, our perception of beauty, our perception of what is considered natural and clean varies even among us here in the United States. So I want to ask you, have you noticed any changes in perceptions of beauty here in the United States?
Yes, I love this question. I have seen some changes in our perceptions. So one thing that I'm noticing here in the US is that we're becoming more accepting of imperfections, such as freckles, moles, that sort of thing. For a recent Spate NYC study, searches actually for freckle pins were up 89% since last year.
Wow.
89%. And that's here in the US alone. And it actually makes sense, because I've noticed just personally in the social media world, I've noticed more of the makeup artists actually finishing their look with freckles or a nicely placed beauty mark, mm-hmm. just, you know, to complete their look.
Mm-hmm.
So these types of imperfections like freckles and like under eye bags, that's such a strange thing.
Really?
That actually was a viral trend on TikTok. Yeah, that was actually a thing. So again, just the whole theme of accepting your imperfections is really something that seems to be resonating.
Well, yeah. That's healthy. So I can accept that. I mean, I might find that definitely interesting for like the under eye bags, but I mean, everybody has them.
Well, exactly. Like who? I never thought that anyone would choose to have that. Like if they want some under eye bags, they can take these.
Here. Yeah, I know. Take mine.
They take them. I've had them since I was a baby. Take them. But that's, you know, just very, very interesting. The other area that we have to acknowledge, right, would be men's care. And even down to product lines specifically positioned for little boys. Mm-hmm. So I think we're seeing more the idea that cosmetics and beauty practices are not a feminine characteristic. Like, you know, it's not, you know, something that's set only for women. Mm-hmm. That beauty practices and cosmetics are not, you know, something that's only for women now. It's not about femininity. It's really about being your best self. There's a company called Strix, I believe their slogan is nothing wrong with handsome. And so this particular company makes makeup actually for men.
Oh, wow.
And so makeup apparently has become a popular thing for men globally, but we'll speak specifically about here in the US. Mm-hmm. Men's makeup, I actually saw this on the news last week, and it's called the Zoom effect, right?
Mm-hmm.
So male professionals are actually fixated in some way on how they appear on camera, whether it be, you know, bags under the eyes or certain blemishes, that sort of thing. So companies such as Strix and Tribe design makeup products for men, such as concealers, tinted moisturizers, beard fillers, that sort of thing. And they've actually posted some of their best sales over the course of the pandemic.
Wow.
So really interesting. So from a global perspective, it's less taboo for men to wear makeup. So this is not as much of a trend or emerging trend as we see here in the US.
Mm-hmm.
A recent Japanese survey of 172 men showed that more than 40% had an increased interest in skincare and a 20% increase in interest in makeup due to the pandemic. And the highest usage was actually for eyebrow products and eyeliner. And then other products such as BB creams, highlighting and shading cosmetics were also popular. So we see here that you know, makeup for men is starting to pick up, but it's, you know, it's been popular in other areas mm-hmm. of the world previously.
Mm-hmm. I would not expect the eyeliner and the eyebrow pencils, but okay.
I was surprised by that. I was surprised by that. But that's, you know, that's a very interesting finding, because I didn't think that men were even concerning themselves with how they appeared, you know, in the virtual world. Until I heard the news report on, I think it was on CBS This Morning one day last week. I thought, what? Wait, that's the thing? Like, men really care? Mm-hmm. And so I did a little research, and it turns out that it's actually true. And the brands that I mentioned are actually you know, doing very well in this particular segment.
It just goes to show that even men, like, we do hold men in, like, any culture, like, regardless of where, like, we do hold them to a standard, even though subconsciously we just feel like, okay, men can just put on and just walk out however they look like. But it seems like that has begun to change, if especially since there's more of a drive to more self-care about their look and appearance.
And I would say, you know, that men are just, you know, based on that, men actually do care more about their looks than they let on. Because I would have never even thought that a man cared if he was, you know, if he, you know, was maybe a blemish was showing on video, or, you know, maybe he was having bags under his eyes. Because in person, that never shows up, you know, that doesn't present itself. But in the virtual world, I guess there's something, you know, there's something about it, because usually how we show up as professionals is how we dress. And I would imagine, you know, maybe this is something similar to, like, a nice suit and tie or a nice button up for men, or at least that's how it was explained, at least in, you know, in one particular article. But men are actually, you know, concerning themselves with how they appear on camera.
I'm curious to see if, like, these practices will continue even after the pandemic is over. Because, I mean, it will be interesting if, like, different in, like, your bosses or coworkers will continue to purchase male version cosmetics and even promote using certain, like, creams and serums. Like, I'm for it, because healthy skin is not just for females. Like, anybody, like, everybody needs to have healthy looking skin, and even makeup. Like, have fun with this, not just for the ladies,
right? And then just for normal life. So I think that was maybe the piece that kind of surprised me. If it was someone in TV, you know, like a news anchor.
Yeah, you're right.
Okay, I can understand. I guess it's their profession, but just for a normal guy to appear on camera, true enough, it is his profession as well. You know, if that's our only way of interacting now. But, you know, do you understand what I'm saying here?
Yeah.
There's a difference between, like, a normal person and someone who lives in front of the camera, like, for a living. You know, that's different. So I would expect, you know, maybe they get a little blot or whatever, you know, whatever they have done before they're in the news studio with all of the lights and that sort of thing, versus what we do before we get on, you know, we as in a normal person, you know, would do before we get on, you know, our computer with, which is probably not super HD like the cameras in a movie, you know, and maybe our little, you know, ring light and that sort of thing. And then particularly for men to actually concern themselves with it, it was really surprising.
Right.
Apparently it has always been a thing, because these companies didn't just pop up. It's just, you know, it's been brought to light due to the pandemic. As well as other trends, you know, as well. I think, you know, something else that's been emerging is actually more care for the eye area, you know, whether it be a weighted eye mask or, you know, eyeshadow or even, like, eyelash conditioners and that sort of thing. It's just more focus on that area, you know, in part driven by, you know, the pandemic and the resulting mask usage.
I did not realize that there were eyelash conditioners. Wow.
Yeah, there's been some buzz in that area.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, the beauty industry is something fascinating. I tell you, there's always something. There's always something going on.
That's amazing. Wow. Well, now this segues into our second to last question. It's more so based off of just your opinion. So on a scale of 1 to 10, How confident are you about the direction of our industry currently when it comes to the different trends that are coming and going, when it comes to our perceptions of beauty, and just where do you see us in the future?
I would say that on a scale of 1 to 10, I think I'm probably about a 7 or 8 on that. I'm a little cautious with the rating due to things that can be limiting as an industry, such as some of the regulations, right? Mm-hmm. Some of the restrictions, some of the misinformation that's been given to the public, some of the, you know, vilification of various ingredients. So I think, you know, the industry is on one hand becoming a little bit more restricted, but on the other hand, I guess, you know, these types of restrictions and these types of challenges are really opening the door of opportunity for other technical advancements, right? Whether it be naturally derived, you know, ingredients or biofermentation methods or other things related to sustainability. So I think that, you know, that's maybe a twofold perspective on that. Mm-hmm. I would also say that from a societal standpoint, right, I think that we're moving towards being more accepting of everyone, and more accepting meaning across genders, across, you know, across skin color, across hair type, across ability, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So I think that we're moving more towards that direction of really being more considerate of people and really, you know, being more inclusive. And I would say that even within our industry, I've seen a shift in the amount of, and not just the amount, but the quality of images used to depict people of color, particularly Black women. I'd say like many years ago, we would not see a Black woman on the cover of a magazine or a Black woman showcasing being the face of an ingredient story or that sort of thing. But now, and if you did, I will make this point, if a Black woman was featured in a magazine within the industry, there are often times where the hair wasn't styled appropriately, or, you know, just the image wasn't cast in the most positive light.
Right.
Whereas, you know, fast forward now, many years later, we see Black women on the cover of magazines in the beauty industry. We see Black women in many of the beauty campaigns, and they look beautiful. Okay. I think there's more accepting of the features. There's more creativity in the imagery. The quality is great. And it really represents the diversity of people, but also in a positive light.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And I mean, even as myself, I'm still entering into the industry, but I do agree that we definitely do have some work to do as a industry. I mean, there are a lot of components that need to be addressed that have been, but also like there's still more work to be done. But I do have some hope that in like the next, I would say, 5 to 10 years, that the industry, like, we would be more accountable with our actions, with how information is relayed back to the average consumer, and more so just even like our product production from the formulation to the packaging. Like, I mean, we're starting to become more transparent with all of these aspects, but I mean, there's always room for improvement.
Yeah, agreed. And I think we're definitely moving down that path. And I would even venture to say that we're moving down that path faster than we were before. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like the momentum is just building up. It's just building up. It's just building up. Mm-hmm. So I'm confident in the direction that we're going in.
And that's good, because we need, I mean, even though like we can be wavering about certain actions of certain companies or even suppliers, I mean, we do need to have that level of confidence that, okay, like, we will have slip ups, but as long as we address it and we can figure out why it happened, and then we can learn from it and move on. That's what I agree. And now our last question, and one of my favorite questions that I ask many of my podcast interviewers. If you were a cosmetics, what would you be and why?
I would be lipstick.
That's so you.
I would be lipstick. Lipstick is, it reminds me a lot of myself. Like it's not, you know, it doesn't seek out attention. It's kind of low key, but when it has that attention, oh. I just really, really like lipstick. I think, you know, for me, lipstick is that thing that you can really use to express yourself. And so that's one of the things that I really, really like about it. I mean, whether it's just, you know, a nice subdued nude or a, you know, a bold red or an even bolder color like a blue or a green or a black, it's just so expressive. Mm-hmm. And if I'm not wearing anything else, I would put on a lipstick. You know, like lipstick is just, I think the lipstick is the must have.
Okay. That is totally so you though.
I just love lipstick.
That's totally so.
I think lipstick is just really diverse. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's multifaceted. That's the term. That's the term that it is.
Okay.
Yeah. I would be lipstick because lipstick is multifaceted.
Okay.
And it, the color and the finish, there's so many different options. There's the color, there's the intensity of the color, there's the finish, whether or not it's a matte or a satin or a high shine.
I love me.
And then I love matte. Matte is a whole mood. It's an attitude. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I love matte. I love all lipstick, but my mood in a matte lipstick might be different than my mood in a, you know, high shine lipstick. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, my personality in a nude lipstick is different than when I put on my black lipstick. Mm-hmm. It's different than when I put on my blue lipstick. And it's definitely different when I put on my red lipstick, you know. So their lipstick is just so multifaceted yet simple at the same time, right?
Mm-hmm. I agree.
It's a must have. You can communicate so many different things with lipstick.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's a must have. It's so creative.
Mm-hmm. I agree, especially with all the options we have out now. I mean, oh my gosh, you can spend forever in like Sephora or Ulta.
And lipstick is the one thing that you can put on and feel like you're completely put together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you might not have a full face on, or, you know, you might not have fancy eyeshadow, but you put on lipstick and it looks like you have your life together.
Yep. You set your whole, you're right. Mm-hmm.
It's so funny. My sister and I used to fly standby. My dad was working at the airport. And so for the family, you know, like discount, you could fly standby, mm-hmm. but the downside to standby obviously is that you might not get on a plane.
Yeah.
So we spent some nights in airports. And so one of the running jokes that we had when we would get stuck in the airport would be that, okay, well, I'm just going to sleep in the airport. And then tomorrow morning, I'm going to get up and put on a different shade of lipstick and go to my gate. Because just changing your lipstick changes your, it just seems to change your mood. And it just seems to like change your experience. Mm-hmm. So sure, you're wearing the clothes from yesterday because your luggage is probably checked, or, you know,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, just like you spent the night in the airport. But the one thing that you can do to change yourself from day to day that other people can see is change your lipstick.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, they've seen you in the airport before, but they didn't see you in red. Yesterday, you were in a pink lipstick.
Exactly.
Red lipstick is different.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I agree. And that just goes to show that, I mean, cosmetics and beauty do play a huge role in just how we perceive ourselves, how we perceive others. And I mean, I enjoy this industry and I enjoy the creativity behind every single product brought to the market.
I know you, these things are really a part, you know, it's a part of us.
Mm-hmm.
For example, like, even though we're wearing masks, how many of us are still wearing lipstick? I know I do. Mm-hmm. Even if it's just that I'm going to see myself with my lipstick on, you know, when I glance at myself in the mirror in the car, mm-hmm. that's what's normal to me. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, if I'm at the office, maybe I'll have a mask on all day, or when I take off the mask, I'm only in my office alone and no one's going to see. But to me, having that lipstick means that I'm complete, mm-hmm. you know, and my mood, you know, is different, you know, versus maybe not wearing it. Mm-hmm. These cosmetics really do become such a part of us. Mm-hmm.
And they are diverse in all cultures, in all areas of the world. And that's why the cosmetic industry is literally here to stay forever.
Here, I'm really excited about how the industry is moving in terms of just how people feel about themselves. I think, you know, before beauty was this, the idea of beauty was this one thing related to certain features. And those features, you know, related to body type, they related to hair type, they related to feature type, all of these things, typically slim and narrow, long hair, straight hair, narrow features. And over time, that has shifted, you know, as this shifted so much, I think, you know, looking normal, if that makes sense, mm-hmm. is really becoming more accepted. And that's the way it should be. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm really kind of excited about the way the industry is going. So when I mentioned the piece about freckles, you know, actually imperfections, you know, and freckles becoming something that people are intentionally putting on, and you're intentionally seeing models with freckles or intentionally seeing ads printed with people, you know, that look like, you know, the average person, mm-hmm. it's really interesting to see, you know, to see where we are. And I think it really helps with people's psyche and their overall wellness. Mm-hmm. Actually, this week, GCI Magazine published a report about Unilever. And this is, you know, actually kind of interesting. They're dropping the term normal in their advertisements. And they did this 10,000 person survey, right? A global survey. Mm-hmm. And the results of that survey was that 70% of people agree that using the word normal on hair and skincare product packaging and advertising has a negative effect on them, meaning that the term normal actually makes them feel excluded. Wow. This 70% of 10,000 people. So you just imagine the power of that word. Mm-hmm. You know, 56% of people felt that the beauty and personal care industry can make people feel excluded. Mm-hmm. And 74% of people want to see the beauty and personal care industry focusing more on making people feel better, mm-hmm. not just looking better. And so this is significant. That's a significant amount of people. And that says that consumers are really driving the industry towards, you know, changing some of these beauty standards, mm-hmm. and changing it internally as well, right? Mm-hmm. People are becoming more embracing, you know, of their imperfections, whether it be freckles, whether it be scalp conditions like psoriasis or dandruff, or, you know, other skin conditions like eczema, their blemishes and that sort of thing. They're becoming more accepting of it, more like it is what it is. Let's normalize this and not treat it like some sort of, you know, nasty thing, for lack of a better word, or, you know, like this is normal. And so that's why, again, you see some of the brands that are tailored towards skin conditions having more of a fun sort of persona, more fun branding rather than stuffy, you know, like medical related type branding and that sort of thing. So again, it's really about inclusion and really just accepting, mm-hmm. accepting, you know, ourselves for what we are. Mm-hmm.
And I agree that it should be like this. And this is becoming the new standard that, I mean, accept your imperfections, accept who you are. I mean, we do live in such a social media age where, I mean, you live on the internet, like literally, and filtering and edits of pictures do not really help a lot with the mental health of this era But I am glad that at least cosmetic manufacturers and companies are recognizing that this is an issue. And Unilever even did the survey. So that's
absolutely. Yes. And actually, the survey is part of a positive beauty vision that they have. And it's an initiative really aimed at making beauty more diverse and inclusive. But one of the other aspects of the survey and the initiative is to not just remove the word natural from their brands, but they're also refraining from digitally altering their images as well. So if someone has certain types of blemishes or, you know, they have, you know, other imperfections such as cellulite or any of those types, it's not going to be altered. So the average person will see themselves, you know, in those advertisements. Mm-hmm.
Which is how it should be now, which I'm very excited to see these initiatives coming through.
Yeah. And we've seen this. I mean, we've seen it unfold over the past couple of years. I mean, we've seen, you know, brands, whether it be not just in beauty, rather, but also in other areas as well, such as fashion. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've seen the runway shows now, right? Rihanna's Fenty X Savage runway show featuring not just women, but featuring men as well, and not just super buff men, which is the male version of the beauty standard. There were also men, you know, who were not so buff, men with other body types. So it was very inclusive. And so we see that in that particular area. And we see, you know, also some of the editorial magazines or the campaigns online for some of the brands, you know, we see that a lot of the models are not this, you know, slender, old hackneyed, you know, beauty standard. These are women of all shapes, all shapes, all hair types, freckles and all. I hope I'm not offending anyone with freckles. I just think that it's really intriguing. You know, I just think it's really intriguing, and it really shows that we are becoming more inclusive within the industry. Mm-hmm. I mean, imagine like the things that kids were teased about in school when they were younger might actually be things that are being celebrated now. I mean, you know, imagine that. Mm-hmm. I would even say in the area of disabilities, I think that's an area that we really don't consider a lot in the industry. But I think that we should consider that more. I mean, how powerful do you think it would be if a kid, you know, saw a Maybelline girl in a wheelchair or, you know, with a prosthetic leg or missing a limb or, you know, that sort of thing.
You're right. Because
things like vitiligo, not that that's disabled, but I meant to bring this up when we were talking about like skin conditions and accepting things, you know, like you would never have seen a model with vitiligo back in the day.
Yeah, you're right.
But that's definitely like you would not have seen someone like that in a Maybelline commercial ever.
That's true.
I mean, I just find it so fascinating to see how the industry is unfolding like right before my eyes. And I guess because I'm getting old. But I would like to think though that these changes are happening more quickly now. Mm-hmm. They gotta be happening more quickly. Mm-hmm.
But you're right about like when it comes to handicappedness, when it comes to being wheelchair bound. I mean, we still don't even see that in cosmetic commercials.
You don't. I think P&G, it might have been last year, two or three years ago, mm-hmm. they made a bottle with Braille on it so that a blind woman could tell, you know, or a blind consumer rather, could tell the difference between the shampoo and the conditioner bottle. Like there was some sort of, you know, way that they did that for the vision impaired. And I can't remember exactly if it was Braille in terms of like Braille writing or at least just one particular area. You know, I guess maybe like not the whole label, but maybe one particular area. I can't remember all the details, but that's the only time, you know, the only example of that I've seen in the industry where someone's considering an individual from a disabled class.
That is awesome. And yet I never heard of it.
Yeah, it definitely, it's been a while. I thought like 2 years, 3-4 at the most, I would say. But
because that should catch.
It's been quite recent. And I can't remember all the details, but it was some particular part of the packaging to help them differentiate between shampoo and conditioner. So I guess probably not the whole thing probably wasn't in Braille, because that would be super expensive packaging probably. Mm-hmm. But maybe like just the word spelled out shampoo in Braille on the bottle, you mm-hmm. know, so they could tell the difference.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's an untapped area in our industry.
Very, very.
Actually, I don't have all of the answers of what needs to be addressed. But I think there's something to be said about that visual, that imagery never being used. So we've seen an increase in imagery of people of color, right? But we haven't seen an increase in imagery of people with disabilities.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just from the standpoint of inclusion. I mean, not everything is that they would need a completely different product, but to be considered.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are challenges that they face that we're not aware of, you know, because we're in the able-bodied world. So we're not, you know, we wouldn't be aware of those challenges that they're facing in their beauty practices, because we're able-bodied. This is like second nature to us, and we don't have a reason to consider what we could potentially be missing out. But I think that, you know, every group has certain challenges.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would be worth it to at least consider what their challenges might be, because just because we haven't thought about it doesn't mean that it doesn't exist.
Right.
And it doesn't mean that it doesn't need to be addressed either. I mean, their challenges within the disabled community are unmet needs. Mm-hmm. And in the beauty industry, in beauty and personal care, we're always talking about unmet needs and, you know, unmet needs of consumers. So I think there's definitely a pool of unmet needs that we might not be aware of right now.
Mm-hmm. And not just here in the United States, but even globally. Because I mean, you don't see that being the image of beauty anywhere. And that's just saddening. I mean, it would be great that people with disabilities can be celebrated, like you said, like in a Maybelline commercial, or like just promoting a certain beauty product, or you create a labeling that someone who is blind is able to actually read in Braille. Like, this is by L'Oreal, this is a shampoo, and it has coconut oil in it. Like, okay, cool. Like,
yeah, I mean, right. We want to talk about transparency, right? And we also want to talk about how consumers are more aware of ingredients. I guess, you know, I mentioned thinking just more logistically about like how it could probably be more expensive to print everything in Braille. Mm-hmm. But I mean, to your point, they should be able to read the ingredients that are in there. Products the same way as able-bodied individuals like ourselves can pick up a bottle off the shelf.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I just wonder, you know, from a business standpoint and from a logistical standpoint, what the demographic, what it actually looks like. Does it even make sense to address it? Or of the challenges that the disabled community faces, which are the most pressing, and how can we address,
mm-hmm.
you know, how can we address those?
Mm-hmm.
Or which ones make sense to address, mm-hmm. you know? Because one thing about humans is we're always going to have a challenge.
Yep.
And my challenge might not be important to you. Your challenge might not be, you know, important to me. But, you know, a personal challenge, we can't do things based on personal challenges all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, definitely something that's worth attention.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'll add that to my searches to just see what's happening in that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I agree. Like, wow. Because I mean, after being in the industry for about 2 years now, I mean, I forgot that like people who are disabled really aren't represented in cosmetics at all. I overlooked that completely.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, like, I don't think I've ever seen anyone in a wheelchair in a beauty commercial.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, no. I don't think I have, and you know, forgive me if it's been done.
It's not promoted well enough.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. Or what? I don't know. I just think of like other things, like what else are we missing the mark in?
Mm-hmm.
You know, for beauty, and it could be nothing. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we need to hear that from folks in that particular demographic. Like, what are the challenges?
Right. Absolutely. Well, this has been the most insightful and engaging podcast that I've had in a long time. And so, Dr. Evans, I want to thank you for joining me. This has been, I, as the interviewer, I learned a lot from our session.
Thank you so much.
And Dr. Evans, thank you again. And we hope to have you on again sometime soon.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Like what you heard? The NYSCC is here to move cosmetic science forward. Stay tuned to our next episodes and visit nyscc.org for more content.
Hey, Susanna Fernandez here, this year's NYSCC's chair. Don't forget about Suppliers Days, beauty's main event for innovation in ingredients and formulation taking place on November 10th and 11th at the Javits Center in New York City. There will also be a virtual day on Friday, November 12th to make it accessible for everyone in the industry. We look forward to seeing you there. Visit us at nyscc.org/suppliersday today.